You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Fantasy Sports Today.
Back on the Fantasy Sports Today on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I think it's just Fantasy Sports Today. I said the Fantasy Sports Today, but whatever. Dangling participle, is that what they call that? I don't know. I screwed up. Anyway, welcome to hour number three of Fantasy Sports Today. I'm Mike Blewett, along with Kevin Walsh. We're talking baseball this hour. To wrap up what we were saying before the break, I think it was just, so we're at a point now where Saquon Barkley, even though everybody's like, yeah, he's absolutely the number one pick in the draft, but no way he goes in the top five picks. It's becoming a weird situation now, right? Because so many teams are in need of a quarterback at the top of the draft. We have, so it's Denver at five, the Browns at four, the Colts at six. I think Colts are probably the first team that you could look at, and then the Bucks are at seven, but he'll be gone by seven.
Right.
I'll grant you that. He's gone by seven. I do think he goes sooner. I don't think the Broncos would do that. The Broncos need too much other stuff.
I think the craziest part is we're at a point where even if there weren't trades and the Giants didn't take all of this stuff, even there were no trades, we just went through straight mocks, I still don't think he would make it into the top five. Because I don't think the Browns or the Giants would take him as their first position player off the board.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay. So, whatever. We continue to talk about that in other weeks. Somebody I do want to bring in, because he had the sniffles last week. He claims it's some sort of horrible sinus infection. I think he was just down with the sniffles. It's our producer, Pete Cazadore. Pete, how you doing, buddy?
I love the fact that you're downplaying the amount of sickness I was feeling. No, I'm doing well. I'm doing better, obviously. I'm here producing this show on a beautiful Saturday morning here with you beautiful people. So, glad to be back.
Thanks, buddy. I'm glad you think we're so attractive.
Yeah, no worries. I just wanted to throw that in there. I want to make sure you guys knew that I knew.
All right. Well, yeah. Listen. You give me more compliments than my wife. I should buy you a glass of wine or something first. But in any event, do you have any cool hockey updates? I don't get a chance to do that very often.
Yeah. It's what I'm used for. You bring me in for the hockey, and then boom, never hear from me again. Anyway, pretty cool thing. The Vegas Golden Knights hit 100 points. They're the first NHL franchise in their inaugural season to do so. They are not looking as strong as they did the entire season, so people are kind of getting concerned about their playoff run, but I think they're going to do just fine. The Devils are still sticking strong. The Dallas Stars lost a really big game last night to the Boston Bruins. That kind of really, not kills their chances of the playoffs, but really puts a big, big damper on it. So it'll be interesting to see who makes the playoffs and who actually falls from those wild card slots in both the East and West, because everything is so tight right now.
Yeah, Vegas, they're tied for second right now, so they could drop down to even third place in the conference, correct?
Yeah, which isn't the worst thing in the world. I think maybe the added pressure of being in first, it would be nice to play a wild card in the first round, but if they play the 2 or 3 seed, I really don't think it's a big concern. I think they're going to make it to at least the conference finals this year.
Good stuff. So we got like eight or nine games left, depending on the team. Roughly left in the NHL season. So we'll continue to bring Pete in every week to do a hockey update, because if there's one thing I can say, there have been times in my life where I've been a pretty big hockey fan. Now is not one of those times, but when the NHL playoffs roll around, it's about as intense a postseason as you can watch amongst the major professional sports. Look, March Madness is always going to capture people's attention, but the NHL playoffs, when they get rolling, there's a lot of crazy upsets, and it's a lot of fun to watch. So we'll bring Pete.
Wait, I have one more question for Pete.
Every week. All right, go for it.
Pete.
Yeah?
Are you able to take solace in the fact that the Rangers, despite trading all of their players, currently have the same amount of points as the Islanders?
Yeah, no, it's great. I think the Rangers did the right thing here. They kind of cleaned house. They want to see what they have in their prospects. They picked up a bunch of prospects, which leads me to believe that maybe they're going to possibly try to trade those prospects away for a big-time player. I don't know. Eric Carlson's going to be a free agent. I'm not too sure. They also could be just looking to see what prospects they can grab. Lindgren just signed his entry-level contract the other day. He's with the Wolfpack right now. So it should be very interesting to see the future of the Rangers. Obviously, obviously, playoffs for the Rangers this year is slim to none. They're mathematically still in it, but in the next couple games, they'll be mathematically out of it, I would assume. So it should be interesting to see what we have next year and seasons to come.
All right. Well, good stuff, Pete. Pete Considori, our fabulous producer. He does shows here from time to time. We have a little bit of a changing schedule right now, so we'll see what that's going to be. But Pete, we'll bring him in every week and say hello and make sure his health is good and tells us we're attractive, and then we can see how the Vegas Golden Knights are doing. So, Pete, thank you, buddy.
Mike, we're going to get yelled at on Twitter again, I think.
I know. We have to talk baseball.
Because we started the baseball segment by talking about Saquon at 7 and hockey.
And I know. We're like 8 minutes in. So let me start talking baseball. So we're going to do one thing first, because it's a good article. You can find this in the Roto Experts exclusive Edge package. This article is written by Frank Stanfill. You can find him on Twitter at @Roto_Frank. He does BFFs here each and every week. Day. That's a changing time, so I'm not going to update you right now. But here's what he says. Over the past few years, he's looked for a way to gain a competitive advantage in the rotisserie format, as many others try to do. And something he's come across, which has been helpful for me the past few seasons, is actually preached by his fantasy cohort, Tony Cincotta, who's going to be on air here in about a half an hour. He painted the rotisserie baseball format from a different perspective, which means look at last year's standings, if it's a league that you're in each and every year. Don't even worry about your players and how you're going to project them. Look at the previous year's standings. Specifically, look at what took to place first in each of the categories. You can't know what you're chasing in a rotisserie fantasy baseball league without looking at the history. So Frank kind of took it a step further. He looked at NFC Draft Champions Leagues and the Grand Street Tavern League, which has a bunch of roto experts in it. And he came up with all the average numbers. Winning batting average in the NFBC leagues was basically 274. Runs was about 1,000. Now, based on your league, you should be able to look back at the standings, if this is a league that you're in subsequent years, and see what it took to first place in each category, and then build your team from there. It's not dissimilar, Kevin, to the strategy I've told people, like, please look at last year's ADPs mm-hmm. when you're drafting in all sports. You can use a lot of different tools, but this is an excellent way to start with building your fantasy baseball roto league.
It's actually one of the more interesting things that I've been reading throughout. You know, you go through the packages. I mean, it's great to always get into the specificness of players, but I love the idea of kind of having your brand, if you will, because I think sometimes, you know, we can treat fantasy right as if we were our own GMs, and then we can kind of, you know, we talk about the style of how guys draft and certain things of that nature, what you value, and I like the idea of being able to kind of build your own style and just have certain things that you yourself know are important as you head into the draft. So I always enjoy pieces like this. I thought that Frank did a really great job here. And again, honestly, it's still just, and I don't say this just because you're my co-host, but and it's a simple bit of advice, but I can't overhype it enough, is it just the simple idea of looking at what happened last year and not losing sight of that as you head into this year, whether a person you know, was projected to not do much and was able to have some massive breakout year, or the complete opposite, where a player was supposed to, you know, be worthy of a top three pick as far as, you know, first three rounds, and they fell off a cliff for whatever reason.
Yeah, like, you're not going to steal Manny Machado because people are like, I don't want that 256 hitter or whatever. Like, yeah, I get it. He had a crap first half of the season, and that buried his total numbers, and he was on fire in the second half. But you're going to steal other guys. Like, it may not be AJ Pollock, but it could be somebody else that's had a variety of injury issues or just underperformed last year due to a lingering issue or whatever it might have been. You're just going to find a couple of gems. I'm not suggesting you're going to snake everybody in every round, but one or two players that you steal from people because it slipped their mind, or they're looking at a different ADP list as they're doing their draft, can help you. This is like, we talk about just trying to get an edge, trying to be an edge player, an advantage player. It's a gambling term, but you're just trying to get an edge, and mm-hmm. one or two players could separate the difference between first and second place when you're trying to win. So Frank, on this article also, again, it's called Build Winning Fantasy Baseball Rotisserie Leagues. Let me get the actual title. How to Build a Winning Team in a Fantasy Baseball Rotisserie League. You can find this in the Exclusive Edge Draft Package. And lots of you are doing drafts this weekend, but Frank has in this article a range of stats that he thinks could win. Batting average could be first place, could be in the 276 range, runs about 1,100. There's a lot of different things that you can look at. So what you also have to then do is figure out how many total points is going to get you a victory. In a traditional 5x5 league, finishing third in every category would give you 130 total points, according to Frank's stats. If it took down 125 to win your league last year, then you know how to aim for it. You know, you're not going to be able to project through the draft, oh, I should finish third in every category. That would be hard to pull off. You'd be really way ahead of the game. But just know that you come up with a total of what could win you the league, and that's what you're trying to aim for. You don't have to blow out the competition. You're just trying to have the most total points. I know Tony does this as he's drafting. He can talk about it a little bit later in this hour. He says here also another good point, Kevin. Another misconception is that you can't win a rotisserie league if you finish last in a category. He finished 14th in strikeouts and tied for 12th in wins in a 15-team league, and he still managed to win quite handily. The second-place team finished 10.5 points behind him. So you shouldn't just punt any category mid-draft, but it doesn't mean that if something goes south in a category that you're going to be in trouble. I had a huge problem last year with my team. I only manage one or two teams typically. I had a huge problem last year racking up wins. It was just impossible. I just couldn't get wins. I had Archer and I had Tanaka, and Tanaka was like on my team, off my team, back on my team, back off my team, because obviously he was getting blown up at one point in the middle of the season. But I just couldn't scrape out wins. I just couldn't do it. I just trying and at like hell, especially in the second half of the season, to pick up wins, and it just wasn't happening. But my other counting stats, pitching stats, were fine. I had to make sure I kept those intact. I couldn't just take flyers on Kevin Gausman every time he went out there, because it was either going to be a win or he was going to post a 13 ERA on the day. So I couldn't take chances like that. I was smart about it, but it's a long way of me saying you don't have to win every category.
Yeah, I think that's something that you do have to keep in mind is, that's why it is okay, though, if you do punt. Like, I agree that you shouldn't necessarily head straight into a draft and be like, I am not going to have anybody that steals bases. Like, that's poor if all of a sudden you find yourself in a good spot and you're able to get, value on a Billy Hamilton. You don't just pass up on it because you had a plan to not, participate in the stolen base category. But it does, when you leave your draft and you kind of look where your strengths and where your weakness is, if you're able to, identify, wins is, I feel like it's, you don't punt wins. That's not a strategy. But if you find yourself there early enough as you look after the draft, and you can kind of use something like this that Frank's laid out here, kind of, you add up what would be the projections and you say, all right, you know what, I X amount of spots off the wins that would be needed in order to place first. Let me make some moves post-draft. And I don't think that's overreactionary, though, because there are a lot of people who, as soon as the draft is over, they feel like, let me just kind of roll with this for a bit. And I think that's fine. I'm not saying that you need to go out there and completely overhaul a roster. But if you're sat there after the draft and you're like, you know what, I missed out on wins and I'm overloaded in a certain spot, then don't be afraid to make a specific type of move that can, balance your team out.
Yeah, he says here at the end of the article, aim for balance in the top three. You want to build a balanced roster, aiming for that top three range in every category. Mm-hmm. Say you draft Billy Hamilton, and he said stuff happens midseason, so you draft Billy Hamilton for his stolen bases, he gets hurt. It's going to put you behind the rest of the league in stolen bases, but just because that happens doesn't mean you still can't win the league. So he says here, in a traditional roto leagues, you start 14 hitters. He's going with two catcher leagues. Using a projected ranger, each hitter should average 79 runs scored, 23 home runs, 70 RBIs, and 12 stolen bases. He's just saying have your pen and paper right by your side, add up the projections of each player as you try to draft and try to meet those marks. You should have the totals down at the bottom, and just adding it up. You can do it in an Excel spreadsheet. That's what I do. I know Tony's trying to do that. There's other programs out there that people sell, but Tony's, I have to listen to Tony say he doesn't even like using those. He's got to go old-fashioned pen and paper because it's too hard for him to kind of keep up with. Plus, if other people are using the same program, you're effectively drafting the same player in every single round. So some really good tips there from Frank. I think there's a lot of different ways to do it. There's in this exclusive edge package, which you should do it now. If you're drafting now, you can get a discount. Enter code FNTSY. You're going to find strategy articles like this. And in the next segment, we're going to talk about eight players you'll regret not drafting. That's from a different site, but I thought it was interesting to pull up. So last thoughts, Kev, before we hit the break.
Well, I think I just wanted to ask you: are you still drafting right now for as we head up? Because I'm going to be honest, it actually really snuck up on me that baseball started Thursday. That was actually like that was a huge surprise to me.
I have a draft tomorrow, and I'll probably join a random league sometime before Thursday. So that'll be my two teams most likely. You know, one other thing I'd say is from George Kurtz. He's my trusted companion on this on a Saturday morning show for like a year and a half. He'll tell you, and he does the closer report every week for Roto Experts. Do not draft a closer early. I know you're going to be wanting Kenley Jansen or somebody else. I've crushed my team by drafting Zach Britton. It took me months to pull out of a Zach Britton injury. Hell. We're going to come back, talk about eight players that you need, you'll regret not drafting. It's Mike and Kevin. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're back right after this.
Playing daily fantasy basketball this year? Consider Daily Roto your go-to resource. Whether you play on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. With a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, there's no better place to get your NBA DFS content. Better yet, you can save 10% using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium and learn more about our awesome product.
Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I was just on Twitter. I was reading a tweet. I'm going to diverge off of MLB for 1 second. And then I have an MLB story to update. And I have an article that I want to do. But J.J. Zachariasen at Late Round QB on Twitter, he does a lot, especially in terms of fantasy football and DFS. This is the sort of my point, and I haven't said it as succinctly as he says it here. He said, it's possible that Sashi Brown did a good job and that John Dorsey is thus far doing a good job with the Browns rebuild. Just throwing that out there, because there has been a sense of like, hey, why did you fire Sashi? He was compiling all these players, turning over the roster, getting good value. And then there's other people saying like, he's ruining all of Sashi's work by doing X, Y, and Z. And it's like, no, I don't think Sashi should have been fired because his plan didn't play out yet. But also, I don't think John Dorsey has screwed it up. He might be drafting Sam Darnold, and he might get value at the 4 pick. So why don't you just let him pick a couple of players and sign a few guys that he thinks will work well for the team? Jarvis Landry's awesome. I don't care what people think of his low average yards per catch. He's a really good player.
I think this feels very, the more I think about it, it feels very process-esque. Like, very, very similar to what the 76ers did. I mean, they were disgustingly horrible. And it turned into Joel Embiid, who is one of the most promising young bigs in the league. Ben Simmons, who looks like he's going to win Rookie of the Year. Now, Markel Fultz doesn't have shoulders, but if that gets sorted, I think that he still has got a world of potential ahead of him. They might have another top 10 pick this year, depending on where the Lakers pick lands. And honestly,
how does Fultz get there without them knowing about this medical condition?
I thought it happened in the summer league. It's one of the weirder stories, I think. I mean, it certainly, I don't think it tops the whole Kawhi Leonard stuff, but...
I can't even do that. We don't even have time to do that.
Can I just...
That is like a three-hour show.
Can I sidebar mention the Steph Curry injury? Are you at all starting to be open to the idea that the Warriors may not get there? I don't want to go too far, I know, but just quickly.
Yes, if he's out, yeah.
I mean, it's... Yeah. I saw the point that kind of injury was really on the side of the Warriors over this last 3-year stretch. And if it went the other way, I'm not saying that it's karma, but it's just there is a reason why teams don't rip off 4 straight finals appearances consistently.
100%. Yeah, people are like, nobody's ever going to beat the Warriors. And it's like, Steph hurt his ankle that one time, and then Draymond hurt his hip that next time. Otherwise, they would have won 5 in a row. And it's like, all right, but they didn't because exactly. Those guys got hurt, and that always happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm open to it. I do think it's Warriors-Rockets in that conference finals, but I'm open to it. So Miguel Sano is not going to be suspended by Major League Baseball. That story came out yesterday. Mm. Afternoon, they did not find sufficient evidence in order to warrant a suspension in their minds. I'll give you the exact quote. Insufficient evidence to support a disciplinary determination against Sano. So he's injury-riddled season last year, still only 24 years old, tons of power. Obviously a guy that people are going to be looking at in redrafts, and I'm sure keeper leagues are happy about it. So here we go. Article on Fantasy Pros, 8 players you'll regret not drafting. This is written by the Fantasy Pros staff because there's a bunch of people that chimed in here. Featured experts are Dan Harris from Fantasy Pros, Jake Seeley, our very own from Roto Experts, also our very own Tim McCullough, Roto Experts, award-winning Tim McCullough from Roto Experts, and Bobby Sylvester from Fantasy Pros. So there should be 2 goals you have when heading into a draft. 1, being prepared and having a trusty cheat sheet that you can depend on. And 2, not having any regrets after your draft is complete. With these 2 things in mind, it's helpful to mark up your rankings with players that you want to target so you don't forget. If you're not sure who this player should be, have a look below. We asked our featured pundits who they would regret not drafting this year. So player number 1, Travis Shaw. This is from Dan Harris of Fantasy Pros. Shaw had a breakout season in 2017, and in light of his move to Miller Park and the changes in his approach, fantasy owners should be buying in. He focused on being more patient, and unlike many of his fellow players, he reduced his fly ball rate, which led to his increase in batting average. What really stands out, and what makes Shaw someone to target, are his home road splits. 255, 327, 452 at home, and 291, 370, 571 on the road. He had a bunch of family issues last year that distracted him, and despite that he's in hitter-friendly Miller Park, his numbers were low. So the thought process being the home numbers rise to meet the road numbers, and then you have a devastating hitter.
I actually, this is really well thought out because some people might think, like, why would you be worse at home on the road? And the answer is kind of right there, right? If you're on the road, obviously there's a lot of things. I mean, you know, it mentions it had to do with health and, you know, his young daughter. So obviously it's a horrible thing. But, you know, for a player, just the player, for Travis Shaw, the ability to be on the road kind of just away from things and focus on baseball, maybe it allowed him to just do exactly that. And that's why you saw that huge uptick. And when he was at home, he was probably handling a lot more. So if that does balance out, I mean, I think Dan here nails it. Like, you're getting what could be a steal.
Yeah, no doubt. Second guy we're going to talk about, I think we talked about him last week. So here's what happens to me when I do shows. I'm doing shows, you know, Saturdays. I'm doing special shows. I'm being sort of sometimes guest on other shows. I'm not bragging or anything. I'm just saying, like, I get a bunch of different opinions from my friends who I work with. And last year it resulted in me owning, like, Gene Segura everywhere. And he had a good season, except he got hurt a whole bunch of times. He was producing, I should say, but he got hurt a whole bunch of times. And it ended up becoming like pro Mariners before the season because I had Nando DeFino and Matt Modica, the guys that host on this network, keep talking about the Mariners and even George Kurtz. So I had like a bunch of Mariners and Mitch Haniger and Ryan, Gene Segura. And like I just kept, I'd throw Jared Dyson in there for stolen bases. So in any event, Kipnis is a guy that keeps coming up. I keep reading about him or hearing about him. He had an injury-filled season in 2017. He's only able to play 90 games. His spring training stats, 6 homers, 12 RBIs, and a .429 batting average don't guarantee anything. He's healthy. His fly ball rate ended up at a career-high 44% last year. So you like him to be a 25-30 guy and maybe a 2020 season not being out of the question?
See, this is one of the things is, I had quite a low opinion of Kipnis, but the more I see his name, It's just, it's all positive things. And there are two just things in here that do stand out are what he's been able to do so far in spring training. And I mean, you're not going to put too much into that, but he's clearly swinging the bat well, right? And that's exactly what McCullough says here. And the other thing is, I've always kind of liked when sometimes a player goes through altering their swing. I think that it shows awareness, and I think that it shows that they're not shy to improve. And I tend to think that if he made this switch and you're seeing good results so far in spring, I'm not going to doubt it. So I'm kind of starting to think that maybe I got to go find a ways to grab Kipnis on some spots that I finished up and target him a little bit more.
Yeah, Bobby Sylvester from Fantasy Pros says you need to get back in on Miguel Cabrera. Don't be so concerned with the trio of injuries that he had last year. Some metrics would suggest that he was one of the more unlucky hitters in all of baseball. So he thinks if he's a little bit healthier and a little bit more back to the norm of your standard luck, that he's back to north of 300 and north of 25 home run powers. We don't have to comment on that. It's Miguel Cabrera. Mm-hmm. If you feel like you can deal with the injuries, then it's Miguel Cabrera. And like, what else am I going to say? Jake Seeley says Nomar Mazara is a big guy that, that he wants to target. Says he took a big step forward last year. He reached 101 RBIs to go with 20 homers, 60 runs, and a middling average. He was actually the same player from the year before, but his lineup position changed. So after spending most of 2016 at the top or bottom of the order, last year he spent most of his time hitting third or fifth, and that's where the big jump in RBIs came from. That's why owners should buy into another top 35 outfielder finish, potentially even higher. Mazar is just 23, so big-time prospect that produced last year. I'm in on Nomar Mazara.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's simple to see, though, right? If a guy's able to produce at 7, you put him all of a sudden, he gives you the same exact stuff at 2, but now he's got not only more opportunities there, but he has protection behind him. So you see better pitchers. It's the nature of baseball, and he clearly capitalized on that. So there's no reason to feel as if that can't be the trend for him.
Yeah, and I'm looking up where he's going ADP right now. Mazara. Give me a second. I'm searching 46th. So Jake's saying he can finish top 35. He's going on average at 46. I think you bump him up a little bit there. That's the type of stuff, like we talked about before, just trying to get an edge. You're not trying to blow everybody out of the water. It's mm-hmm. nice if you blow everybody out of the water in the draft, but it doesn't guarantee you anything anyway. So you're just trying to get an edge. So here's the second question they asked. Please name one starting pitcher ranked outside the top 25 in the expert consensus that owners will regret the most not drafting. Now, the first guy is a guy that this was my ace, my guy that I had in my keeper league for years, and that's Johnny Cueto. So I have a soft spot for Johnny Cueto. But here's what he's saying. He doesn't understand, this is Dan Harris again, why the fantasy community left off the Johnny Cueto bandwagon so quickly after one injury-plagued season. He battled blisters, decreased movement, lack of command. Everyone just thought he was somebody who hit a wall and completely lost the strikeout zone. He had an 8.2% walk rate versus a 6.9% for his career. He just thinks it was the blisters, doesn't think a decline was imminent, and with an improved team behind him, although that team was improved and now is declining before our eyes because Madison Bumgarner took a line drive off his hand yesterday. He's out 6 to 8 weeks. That's brutal. Mm-hmm. He missed months with a dirt bike accident. And then in his last start in spring training, he was in the third inning. So he's coming out after that. He took a line drive off his underneath his pinky, and he's going to have pins inserted. He's out 2 months. That's brutal.
I don't even know how handle that. Like, there's a lot of people who are like, they have their teams drafted, and I mean, that's so tough to kind of
just need to DL him.
That's so tough to push through, just like right off the bat. I mean, he was going to top of the third round in a lot of spots, if I'm not mistaken, Bumgarner. Like, that's not a. It's a tough, tough spot to be in.
I'll tell you where Bumgarner was going. Bumgarner, he was going, no, second round. He's going 14th, 15th pick, something like that. He's ends up being the Kershaw going in front of him, Scherzer going in front of him, Bumgarner basically third. So, so maybe Cueto moves up. He's getting, he moves up in the order. It hasn't been determined yet as to... Bucci hasn't said that he's the number one starting opening day, but it looks like that's the way it's going. Also, Jeff Samardzija is hurt too, so that's something else to consider. Next guy, let's go to Jake's guy first. Luis Castillo. He says Castillo should be the near top, to be near the top 25 and has a chance to reach the top 15 to 20 starters this year. He has everything you want in a high ground ball percentage, high strikeout percentage, quality fastball speed. Batters hit just 198 off Luis Castillo last year. And the only concerns are the innings jump and ballpark. Based on pure talent, Castillo has the makings to be a star pitcher. So that's an interesting take.
I mean, I like the fact that he's kind of honing in there on the potential. I will say I've often found Jake to be really, really good on pitchers. Just as I've followed his rankings, I mean, I know he's had years where he's finished as like the number one fantasy baseball. So that, I mean, he's kind of hitting him out the park all over the spot there. No pun intended. But I really do feel like he's had a good eye for where you can get some real good pitching talent. So the fact that he's going to put his name to a young kid like this, I like that.
Yeah, I'll tell you, since I'm reading an article from Fantasy Pros, I'll just do the Fantasy Pros ADPs right now. So I said Bumgarner before. I was looking at NFBC. So according to Fantasy Pros, it's Kershaw, Scherzer, Kluber, Sale, Bumgarner. So Bumgarner going fifth and about 25th overall. So you're not far off, Kevin, for where you're saying like top of the third round.
Mm-hmm.
Right behind Sale, right in front of Strasburg and Syndergaard. So it gives you some sense of where he was. But Luis Castillo... let me go down, find this somewhere. Castillo. Wow. Yeah. So he's down to the 38th starting pitcher going.
Wow.
140th overall. And Jake thinks he could be near the top 25. So
Jake
again,
has him
that's
at 29.
Really, yeah. So pretty. Yeah. So. That's a pretty significant jump, you know, getting a guy 10 slots earlier. So, mm-hmm. you know, you're thinking here, so you're in a 12-team league. He's going 140 overall. You can do the math. That's 12, 14, 12 rounds, 14 rounds. He's in the 15th round there, basically. Is that right? Am I doing my math right? 14th round. So you take him in the 12th round. You get a little bit of an edge there, or the 13th round. Just keep an eye on somebody like that as he continues to fall. Next guy, Mike Clevinger, starting pitcher for Cleveland. There are many standout options here, ranging from Lance McCullers and Blake Snell to Denelson LeMay and Danny Salazar. His favorite option in this range is Mike Clevinger. He's going practically for free. When he pitches like a top 15 pitcher in baseball, fantasy owners will pull out their hair, wondering how they missed out on a guy who's better inning for inning than Robbie Ray and Carlos Carrasco last year. Here's the list of pitchers last year with at least 10 Ks per nine and an OPS against lower than 650. Kluber, Scherzer, Kershaw, Sale, Strasburg, Severino, Ray, and Clevinger. 70 more innings he thinks he gets this season, and he's going to be one of the top pitchers in baseball. So Mike Clevinger, a guy that he thinks makes a huge leap.
Yeah, I mean, that's quite the claim, right? Like the premise of the article was just someone that'd be outside of top 25. And the closing words there are, he will establish himself as one of the best in the game. I mean,
and Mike Clevinger is going 56th among starting pitchers.
I mean,
so
that's a limb. That's a limb.
That's bold.
That is.
That's bold.
That's just like.
Last guy is Michael Wacha. That's from Tim McCullough. He thought he put together a respectable but unspectacular 2017. He's age 27, right smack in the middle of his prime production years. He feels like his floor is very stable and no limits to his upside. So there's your guys. Cueto, Clevinger, Wacha, and Castillo for pitchers, and for hitters, Mazzara, Miguel Cabrera, Jason Kipnis, and Travis Shaw. So good stuff's there. I'm out. Tony Cincotta's going to take over with Kevin Walsh. I'll talk to you next week, but come right back for the final segment of Fantasy Sports Today on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 fantasy sports network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Good morning, or is it afternoon? Depends on when you're listening. If you're live, it's the morning. If it's on demand, it's anytime. What is going on, my man? How are things going these mornings? Are you guys absolutely getting it done?
Tony, that's the only way to go about it. Tony, this is the beautiful thing about you, Tony, is you just come straight in and it's your show now. And I'm just here for the ride, I feel.
That's it. You know, it's like a bicycle. It's a bicycle. It's a two-man bicycle. Have you ever rode the two-man bicycle?
No.
I've seen it, but I don't think I've ever rode, like, the two-man bicycle.
On a normal bicycle. That's far too much exercise for me. Tony, what are you talking about here?
You refrain from the normal one.
No, I never ride a bicycle. I like the stationary one. I don't ever fall off. Wait, can I ask you a quick question? Something just popped along my Twitter line here, and I must ask. Today is the 17-year anniversary of when Randy Johnson murdered a bird with a baseball.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We were talking about that, actually, a couple of weeks ago. Randy Johnson threw a ball and murdered a bird, and people got all up in arms about it. And these pigeons, though, and these birds that come into play never get charged with trespassing. So I think every once in a while they get what's coming to them. I remember Dave Winfield had a similar situation in Toronto, and I think he got charged, and then they dropped the charges at some point.
That's what a wild. I remember when I first saw that video when I was young, and I didn't think it was real at all. But I mean, you that's something. I mean, that thing just really like poof, it was gone. Let me just get as much possible knowledge for the good people of this network.
I want to ask you about one thing though. I was listening to you last segment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Jake Seeley's things and all the guys over at Fantasy Pro. Nomar Mazara to me is interesting because as good as a year as he had last year, he actually has only one stat that's above fantasy average. Last year, the 101 RBIs, right, is a great number and one he could use. But he had a .253 batting average, which is below what you need. He had two stolen bases below what you need. He had runs scored 64 below what you need. In home runs 20, 119 people hit 20 home runs. So as good as Nomar Mazara is, he only has one category that's above what you need when you put your team together.
So do you think people are more so looking for the potential or they're just inaccurately?
That's what it is, yeah.
Okay.
No, I think that's what it is. I think the 23 years of age, they're thinking like he's going to come on and do more. And I think sometimes, though, what you do is you try to pick 23 guys with potential instead of just taking some, you know, if you go more than three or four guys on potential, I think you're risking too much there.
I wanted to ask you, though, more about just some fantasy strategies because it's a lovely listener pointed out to myself and Mike that this is a big fantasy baseball draft weekend, and I just was wondering if you can give the people some of your personal tips that you always keep with you as you head into these drafts, just some things that you keep on your mind as you're, you know, as the draft is continuing to develop.
Well, I'll tell you the first one, and this is going to seem harsh. People don't know how to play fantasy baseball. The first thing you need to do is you need to go back to last year's league if you can. Go back to last year's league, and you need to look at the categories, right? And find out the number for the home runs, RBIs, runs scored, and find the third-place number in each league. If you weren't, say it's a new league, go and find three or four different leagues of that, you know, a 10-team or 12-team in the same scoring and use that. And then put an Excel spreadsheet, and every time you make a draft pick, right, use a projection and put that number in and then add up. Like, you need 300 home runs. Well, add up. I drafted Giancarlo Stanton. I'll be safe and put him for 50 home runs. I draft Billy Hamilton. I'll be safe and put him for 32 stolen bases. And I add up as I go. And then I'm just trying to get those numbers. Like, I don't draft players. I draft numbers. I think people look at it wrong. People are drafting players. What you're trying to draft is numbers.
I think that that's incredible advice. And if you can kind of separate the name from the numbers, then it'll probably help you quite a bit.
Yeah, that's the way you have to go about it. I mean, a lot of people look at like average draft position. I think you need to know a little bit about it because I think the first four or five rounds you don't want to be going crazy. But after that, I don't even think about ADP. Mm. I'm thinking about the numbers that I need. Like I'm down in stolen bases. I'm down in runs scored. I'm down in RBIs. I'm lacking in strikeouts, and that's what I'm doing. Then all of a sudden, I'll readjust my columns in my draft software, you know, whatever, if you're using ESPN Yahoo, and I'll put all the strikeout leaders up at the top. And then I'm figuring out which ones, you know, were flukes, which ones are consistent, what do I need there, and go from there. I think you got to get the names off the back of the jerseys, and you got to think about numbers to be successful.
I think that's some brilliant advice. Tony, while we have you here, let's talk a little bit about March Madness. Last time you were on, you were telling us about some brilliant bets that you were hitting. I think it was like 8-game parlay.
Yeah, I hit 18 parlay. Thursday I got crushed, and last night I had all the winners again.
Mm, not bad. So a 50-50 split, if you will. But aside from the betting, how have you felt so far with this whole tournament? Because I mean, for me, it's just, especially I guess it's the left side of the bracket, it's just been wild to watch.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy. I was actually looking in. You know, besides that Virginia-Arizona side, I still got teams there because I think I had Michigan and Villanova going pretty far in Kansas. Mm. So I'm okay there. But here's the thing is I think it's great and I want more. I've been saying on different shows that I want either one of two things, and people are going to laugh at this at first and not consider it. But I want every team in the NCAA tournament. And we could figure out a way to get some buys if we have to for, you know, the top 64 or whatever.
Right.
Or I want every team with at least a 500 record in.
I think it'll be tough, right, if you get all of a sudden like the uneven numbers and figure it out. But you're asking for a lot of chaos, Tony. You're asking for
But this is the greatest thing, right? Everybody's talking about Loyola or Chicago, right? Mm-hmm. That's the greatest thing ever. Imagine if we had all of a sudden a couple teams like that. Or if we had a couple now 116s, you know, like Kansas taking on some of these, you know, Davidsons all the time and those teams taking a run. Why not let everyone be part of it? We know the whole basketball is corrupt and not all the teams have a chance. Like a lot of these teams have to win their conference tournament. And that's the second thing, that's the second part of this. To accommodate the extra time we'll need, too. We're going to get rid of conference tournaments because I hate them. Because it doesn't make any sense. You play 30 regular season games, right?
Right.
And then you throw them all out the window for 4 days and let the winner of that tournament go to the championship. That's wrong.
It is brutal for those teams that are, I don't even know a good example off the top of my head, but those teams that just, they dominate these lower conferences and then they just slip right there at the end and all of a sudden the sixth best team in the Mountain Southern Northern West Conference gets in and they get their doors blown off them. It's a little bit of a waste of time. The one thing I will say is I think this might be a year where people realize that there is a thing as too much Cinderella. Like, if you were to compare Saturday's slate of games to Sunday's, I think you will get a lot more people more excited for what you have on Sunday. Like, if you could have got Kentucky to play the big Cinderella of Loyola Chicago, and then you had Michigan with Florida State, at least Florida State is the name recognition, that sits a lot better than the fact that you have 2 9s and an 11 as three of your four teams competing on Saturday.
I mean, just the seedings get a little screwed up where we, you know, usually we have the 9s versus the highest seed, but just because it got a little screwed up, I think it was just, you know, unlucky that way, and we'll see how it goes. But I'll tell you what, people are following the stories, and it's crazy because, you know what, I was listening last night to a show. If you bet $100 on Florida State every game and rolled it over on the money line, you'd be up $2,300 right now. But if you bet Loyola Chicago $100 each one, you'd only be up $1,300.
Really?
Florida State's been bigger on it. Yeah, they've been bigger underdogs because they played higher-seeded opponents.
Wow. That's actually really interesting. So I was actually I was saying that same thing to Mike, is that Florida State has probably had the toughest path to this point, because they played an 8-1-4, and especially with two of those teams being I guess you could say, I don't know, typical powerhouses with Xavier and Gonzaga.
Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you what, I'm shocked. I had them. They were the last team that won in my that 18 parlay in the first, and they came out storming and they fell apart. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think they would take down Gonzaga, but Leonard Hamilton, he's always taking a lot of crap, and he's they kept him in Florida State. Now it's paying off.
So what do you have for the Elite Eight? Take me through here, Tony. What are we working with here? What are the what's the Final Four going to look like?
Jesus, I shut it down last night after after the whole
time to bow out.
No. I'm gonna. Here's what we got. Here we got now. I like that it's in Boston. Villanova is the best team that I've seen play so far, so I think Villanova's in.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree that they're the best team?
I agree. It was really funny. I was saying this to Mike. Like, a lot of people were praising West Virginia's defense yesterday, and then I was looking at the box score. They gave up 90 points, and Villanova shot 50% from the field and 54% from three. What the hell? What are we talking about here?
So, they're the best team I've seen. So Villanova, I got one side. And Duke's front court is NBA-like. I mean, so I want to say Kansas. I want to say Kansas, but I can't. It's going to be Duke. It's going to be Duke in that side. Now, the other side, I'm going to go with Michigan. They shot lights out of the last game. The first game, they're lucky to still be in it. So I'm going to go with Michigan in that side, and then I have to go in the ugliest bracket ever. Loyola or Chicago. It's insane watching them play because those kids remind me of like Princeton back in the day when they used to make the NCAA tournament and they would do all this cutting to the hoop and they'd end up with layups. I mean, Nevada came out and put it on them. And then they just stayed the game, and they just kept playing hard. And they play a crazy offense that should be like a high school offense that should be easy to stop, but teams don't. So I don't know. It's going to be Loyola Chicago in a game against Michigan in the Final Four, and then we're going to have Duke and Villanova, and it'll be Duke or Kansas. I think one of those. I mean, that one. That's the only one to me that could go either way.
I think that's fair. I have Kansas State beating Loyola
Kansas
Chicago.
Kansas State's big, though. They're big, too. But I don't know. Loyola Chicago, they just seem to have this offense that's clicking.
They don't. The one thing about them is they don't ever seem to be rattled by anything. No. I think that that's fairly impressive for one of these lower seeds to kind of just be continuously in the bigger spots and just at all times have their composure about them.
And so, which happens all the time in the NCAA tournament, the top game is not going to happen in the finals. It's going to be in the Final Four when you have Villanova versus Duke or Kansas. And it seems like in a lifetime of watching the college basketball game, that it always is the semifinal game that's the most attractive game.
Mm-hmm. I agree, although I will say, if Michigan doesn't get out of this Final Four, that's... Although I said the same thing about Kentucky when I was looking at them, and then they lost to Kansas State. Did you see P.J. Washington miss 12 free throws?
No, I didn't notice it was 12.
But... So the team missed 14 free throws. He missed 12 of those 14.
Did he bet on the game?
He's a big... They told him to bet on the Wildcats. He just picked the wrong ones and went to Kansas State. He had no idea.
I'll tell you what. There's a lot of times when these games, like, it's just insane. These games in the last 2 weeks have come within 1 point of the point spread. Like, so many times, it's unbelievable. So, and it makes you wonder at times.
So some would wonder if Vegas maybe knows what they're doing. Tony, while I have you here, because I like to listen to you tell NFL organizations what they should do or why they're dumb.
Which one?
the Giants, though, are sad at two. And I think they're in a position where it feels like they can't mess things up. But now it's gotten out there pretty much that all they want is Sam Darnold as in terms of quarterback. They're even flirting with the idea of seeing if they can get the first pick from the Browns.
Yeah.
What are you expecting from that?
I never watch any of those things. And I watched that kid, He impressed me really, really much. And for one, I didn't think he was as big as he was. He's a big dude.
Mm-hmm.
Two, he's a leader. He is an absolute leader. I don't know who the hell was supposed to be running that thing that they did the other night where all the teams came to watch him. He was the guy running it, man.
He was telling everyone
what to do. Yeah, and I'm like, this is a college kid. This is amazing. He's a leader. Because I watched him play during the season. I wasn't impressed. I liked him. So I don't think the Giants get him.
I don't either. Everyone is saying that the Browns are taking Darnold's start. Any mock draft you do with the Giants at two. And I feel like the Giants are in a position here where it is quarterback or trade, and there really is no other option for this team. That's not to say that players like Saquon Barkley and Bradley Chubb and Quentin Nelson aren't incredible prospects. They are. But I just think that if they were to take one of those guys, it would be a really poor job evaluating the temperature of the room and assessing what's there. When you look at what the Jets gave up to get to just three spots ahead of him.
Can I tell you, that's the worst trade I've ever heard in my life, that what the Jets did? Ever. Here's the problem I have with that. Whoever made that trade should be fired, because I would come in the office and I would say, if I'm Woody Johnson, explain to me who you're going to draft.
And then when he
doesn't have a name, I'd say you're fired. How do you trade four picks and not have a name? Basically, what the Jets says, you know what, we'll just take whoever's left, but we'll give you four picks to have that honor. Are you kidding me?
I think that is one of the crazier things, is that the Jets are actually... I hope the case is that they're that in love with the whole quarterback class that they're okay with it, and not that they feel so pressured to take a quarterback that they said, it doesn't matter, we're going to get one of them.
You can't trade four picks and not have a favorite guy.
That'll do it for Fantasy Sports today here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. For Tony Cicada, for Mike Blewett, I'm Kevin Walsh. We'll see you guys next week. We'll